Speaking with
Ernest Sternglass, Professor Emeritus of Radiological Physics at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine, where I've been teaching since 1967.
And how do you get into the field that you're in today, looking at low-level radiation?
Well, that's because you might say it began in childhood, because my father was a dermatologist who discussed with my mother over the dinner table the misuses of X-rays. As a child, I already learned both the benefits and the dangers of radiation. But later on in life, I became involved in working on instrumentation to reduce the dose in medicine and radiology by developing image intensifiers that would cut the dose to a person by 100 to 200 fold compared to the old fluoroscopes that Thomas Edison invented a century ago. And so we now have modern television units in hospitals where the dose from medical X-rays has been vastly reduced compared to 20, 30, 50 years ago.
Now, you say you learned this as a child. How old were you, and what year was that? Because at that point, when we were children, we would go into the shoe store and love to put our feet under the fluoroscope.
I did, too. I remember going into shoe stores and wiggling my toes, and that was fascinating. And that actually attracted me into the field of physics and radiation and ways to cut down the dose to people, which was quite high in the early fluoroscopes. And then, in about 1962, when everyone was told we have to build bomb shelters because we're likely to have a war with Russia and there would be fallout from which we need to protect our children, I happened to be chairperson of the Federation of American Scientists in Pittsburgh. And so we decided to do a study of what would be the usefulness of shelters in a nuclear war. And very soon I was picked to look at the effects of what would happen from the fallout, not from the blast and the fire, but from the fallout that would come down. And when I began to study what had been kept secret by our government, the amount of fallout came down, where it came down, and how serious it was, it was beginning to be released in connection with congressional hearings, I heard about the findings of Dr. Alice Stewart at Oxford University, who a few years earlier, in the mid-50s, had learned about a rise of leukemia and childhood cancer in England that was very disturbing, and so she sent out questionnaires to the women who had children that had developed leukemia and cancer. And she found out, compared with other women who had healthy children, that the women who had children with leukemia and cancer had gotten X-rays during pregnancy. And that was the first indication that we had vastly underestimated the seriousness of low-level radiation from bomb testing, and that was my first concern. And so I decided to study this, and because of my interest in X-rays and radiation, I began to do statistical studies and eventually discovered that not only childhood leukemia, but infant mortality rates also increased enormously after coming down steadily at 4 or 5% per year for decades and decades. They leveled off during the time of bomb testing, and only after the end of bomb testing did it begin to go down again. And so I published papers, and in 1963, I published a paper in Science in June pointing out that we must end bomb testing in the atmosphere. And I so happened to know one of the science advisors of President Kennedy. His name was Dr. Ralph Lapp, and he looked at my paper and made some suggestions, and then he took it to the White House. And Kennedy was in the process of negotiating with Khrushchev about ending bomb testing. Well, the military didn't want to end it altogether, but he succeeded in at least arranging for a treaty to be signed in the summer of 1963 that would end atmospheric bomb testing for the United States, Russia, and Britain, who were the only ones who were testing at the time. And so he arranged for hearings in Congress after first going on the air in July and telling the nation that the time has come when we must stop the strontium 90 in the bones of our children and leukemia in our children. And therefore, he urged the public to essentially support a test ban treaty. And so many women marched around the White House in baby carriages, and they sent letters to senators. And therefore, he managed to get the treaty signed and ratified a few weeks before he was assassinated. And that may have been his greatest contribution in terms of ending a terrible threat to the health of people all around the world, because it circles the world, gets into the milk, into the water, into the drinking water. And what nobody had really fully suspected until Dr. Alice Stewart's wife work is that she really proved that the infant and early development is so much more sensitive. And she found later that the children who died of leukemia had often many cases of pneumonia and other infectious diseases. And so it was clear that what was really happening from the fallout, that it was weakening the ability of the body to fight infections and cancer cells, all types of cancer cells, and all kinds of things like asthma. And everything related to damage to the immune system was being affected. And what was worse, which we learned gradually from survivors of Hiroshima, or children who were there during the time that they were in utero, and the mother later on gave birth to these children, many of them had mental deficiencies, and they had learning problems and behavioral problems. And many children that were x-rayed to their skull turned out to be, and in the case of Israel, they had children who came to the country and they treated them for ringworm of the scalp. And as a result, many of them developed thyroid cancer, and many of them became mentally ill. And so now we know that radiation in early development can not only affect your health, but everything about you. And what happened since then is I've been pursuing this, trying to warn the world, since I had had a chance to work in radiation. And in fact, for 15 years, I worked at the Westinghouse Research Laboratory and became assistant to the vice president for research, who developed the first nuclear reactor core, and that was actually the first nuclear plant near Pittsburgh, where I lived. And so I was all in favor of it, because it was a wonderful, peaceful application. We would end all the smog and the fog and the dirt and the coal, and coal miners wouldn't get black lung disease anymore. And so I was absolutely in favor of developing the peaceful atom. I had no idea that these plants could not be made to have no releases into the atmosphere and into the drinking water. That only occurred after Dr. John Goffman here in Berkeley, here in San Francisco, pointed out that not only was there danger from bomb fallout, but the nuclear reactors were allowed to discharge certain amounts of radiation that were believed to be harmless, and it turned to be a thousandfold too high compared to what we know now. So we made a terrible mistake, because we were all enthusiastic about the peaceful atom, too cheap to meter, and to clean up the environment and prevent the warming of the atmosphere and the climate, no more carbon dioxide. So it all seemed so wonderful, but there was this terrible joker in the deck, namely that it was far more dangerous to the newborn than any one of us had ever imagined.
Now, this whole debate has gone on around low-level radiation and how much is safe. And you have, of course, you have scientists hired by the government and by the Defense Department who are just paid hirelings, so to speak. Is any amount safe?
No. Unfortunately, no amount is safe. And the reason we know this now is we've done studies around nuclear reactors in many parts around Three Mile Island, where the government said nobody died after Three Mile Island. We found a big rise in infant mortality in the summer and later on, and deaths due to cancers in Pennsylvania were much greater near the reactor than further away. And I've been working and publishing papers, but only recently have we been looking at the situation here in California. And for the first time, we had a chance, because the government had a website now called cdc.gov, a wonder website, so that anyone can download on their computer what is the infant mortality for blacks or whites or Asians. And that's what we did for the case of San Francisco. And here is a picture that illustrates what I'm going to tell you. You see, here we have 1980 going to the year 2000. And we have two curves. And you see the red curve up here is the number of babies that are born in the first year of life that die. And it was going down after the end of bomb testing in 1980. It was just wonderfully coming down for everyone. But then suddenly, after the reactor here had terrible accident in 1985 and many releases before, it began to change. And instead of going down, it went up, and it went up more for the black population than anyone else. And that's very disturbing. And that is what we have now focused on, namely that there appears to be a reason, some reason, probably in the diet, of shipment of food from maybe another reactor. We suspect that the new reactor that started Diablo Canyon in the mid-1980s, that it had very large releases in 89, 1991, and the milk is shipped from the counties around the reactor, Santa Barbara, Kern County, Kings County. They have big dairies, and so they've been supplying milk all to the cities. And it appears for some reason that we're not yet sure of and that we want to test by measuring the baby teeth for the strontium 90. Then we can tell whether or not black babies have more strontium 90 in their teeth, which they lose after age 6 or 7 or 8. And then we can tell why everyone was affected, but the black population was affected more than anybody else. And that is a very disturbing finding.
Now, presumably, though, the babies, or all the children in, let's say, the San Francisco area, white and black, Latino, would be drinking the same milk, but all the babies and children would not be exposed to the other environmental contaminants we have here at the Hunters Point shipyard, going back to the days of the Naval Radiological Defense Laboratory. So these things obviously can combine, no?
Exactly. In fact, what we know is that dust and smog and atmospheric pollution greatly enhance the effect of things, also drugs, any kind of drug, both prescription drugs and drugs used for pleasure, can both influence the risk to the child. Smoking could further multiply it, and there are many other factors in the environment. And when people don't know about this, then they, without knowing it, their chance that the baby will be born underweight or unable to breathe properly or develop diarrhea later, all this is greatly increased. But in addition, there's a very other disturbing thing that we've discovered when we looked at in Washington, D.C., what happened there, and we found that there is a milk marketing system that the federal government established in 1935, long before the bomb, which, you know, wasn't developed until 1945, and that was supposed to guarantee that farmers get a decent price for their milk, no matter how bad it tasted. So they could mix it with other milk and send it in, and they wouldn't lose all their, you know, the milk, the money that they made. So it was to protect the farmers. Well, after we found, my colleagues and I, that infant mortality was much higher around the nuclear plants, that meant that the state health departments used this federal distribution system to ship milk out of their state. And when you ship it from Wisconsin to who knows where, to Chicago or New York or St. Louis, or even, you know, way hundreds of miles sometimes, then they would ship the most contaminated milk into the inner cities. And so the minority people would again be exposed more, and that is one of the things we want to check by measuring baby teeth, which we need to do. And in fact, there is a way to do that for everyone to help who is listening or seeing this program. The important point is that we have a website called radiation.com. radiation.org. That's simple, radiation.org. And if you can go to a computer in your home or your library, you can find out how to send in a tooth from one of your children. And that would be an enormous help to us to understand just what factors in the diet and in the environment were coming together to make it so hard for a child that is born black that is now dying at more than four times the rate of white and Asian children. And we need to do this. But no government agency wants to do this because they gave their blessings to nuclear energy because it would prevent carbon dioxide from coming out. And because we really know the reason is that it makes bombs. You don't make bombs with natural gas or coal, but you make bombs from uranium. And therefore, the government has been hiding, and not just our government, every government in the world that made nuclear weapons and built reactors wanted to keep from the public the real reason for being concerned. In fact, they lied about the effect of Chernobyl. They lied about the effect of Three Mile Island because they want to keep the bombs as being a viable deterrent, you see? And that is the real reason, together with the investment that has been made in 400 nuclear plants all over the world, 100 still operating in this country, and many banks and large industries and oil companies and governments invested in uranium in the ground, which would turn into worthless dust if we found out how serious the effects are on the future of our society.
That's a very powerful statement. Do you have any support in Congress at this point?
Well, at this point, we have not yet had a chance to really present all our latest findings to people in Congress, but Senator Kennedy had been very interested in this problem. He responded to Dr. Jay Gould's request that the National Institute of Health should do a study of cancer rates around nuclear reactors, which they finally did. But you know what they did? They arranged it in such a way that it was guaranteed not to show anything. You know how they do that?
It's like the same way they have these missile tests. They set them up to win.
Exactly, because you have to protect the deterrent of the nuclear weapons, the continued building of more and smaller and more powerful weapons, and you have to keep it from the public. And the way they did this is they only looked at one county in which a reactor was located or a nuclear plant, and then they picked three other control counties. Some of them were right adjacent. And when the cancer rates went up, so did the adjacent ones, because the radioactivity doesn't stop at the boundary of a county. It drifts hundreds of miles. And therefore, the whole study deceived the public into believing, and all the legislators, and all the senators and congressmen and doctors everywhere, that there was no serious effect from nuclear reactor emissions. And that's why we need independent studies. And that's why only people like Dr. Sherman and Dr. Gould and myself, who are retired and have independent retirement incomes and are not dependent on industry or government support, to be able to do these kinds of studies. Because the government at one time was measuring strontium-90 in the bones of babies and in the teeth of babies and in the bones of adults. In fact, they collected cadavers from all over the world and shipped them to the United States to measure strontium-90 because they knew how serious it was. And you know what? Sometime during the last 15, 20 years, they stopped measuring strontium-90 in the environment, in the water, in the soil, and in the plants, and in the fish around nuclear plants. They are no longer required to measure it.
This is interesting because strontium-90 used to be in the newspapers and disappeared. And who was responsible for bearing this?
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which was originally part of the Atomic Energy Commission, but was broken off and supposedly was to be the policeman to guard and, you know, to supervise established standards. Well, they were, unfortunately, the same people, just the sign on the office changed, you know? And they were promoting nuclear energy. And when we found around Shippingport, where the first plant was built by Westinghouse, that there were enormous increases in cancer rates, leukemia rates, infant mortality, all down the river along the Ohio, when they found that we were using the strontium 90 in the soil that was required to be measured then to prove that it came from a nuclear plant, because the closer you get to a nuclear plant, the higher the concentration is near the stack. And so they knew they had to eliminate it because it would be a permanent record in the tooth and bone of children for decades to come that could threaten the viability of the entire nuclear industry. And so they stopped measuring it.
It threatened their profits as well, which is the bottom line.
Protecting the investment in 100 nuclear plants and in billions and billions of dollars in uranium all over the world, which would turn into useless ashes. And that includes some of the principal sovereigns and governments in the world that want to continue to make money on shipping uranium to the world.
What about underground testing?
The tragedy is that Dr. Carl Johnson, who was the health officer around Denver, around Rocky Flats, who unfortunately died a few years ago, discovered in hearings from Congress and other sources that during the years of underground testing, roughly from 1960 to 1970 and even up till end of the 1990s, 1992, he concluded that in about 15 years of underground testing, as much radioactivity escaped as from Chernobyl, which were equivalent to 300 or 400 Hiroshima bombs worth of radioactivity circling the globe. And every government in the world has been covering up the serious effect that Chernobyl had all over the world. And that was just one accident that could happen again because it was human error and human error design that caused these things, and they can happen again. And it would be a great tragedy if we poisoned our future by building more plants or relicensing the existing ones without examining the health effects around. That the public should be allowed to have meaningful hearings where you can examine and cross-examine people and have people swear under oath of what they're saying and have an input and require that health effects of operating plants are examined before they relicense them. But this is all going to disappear because the new administration under President Bush wants to build 50 more nuclear plants, and many are already in the process of being relicensed without examining the kind of detailed health effects that we have been studying.
Well, on that pessimistic note, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Sternglass, for this interview. Do you have, is there anything positive that you could see coming out of this? I know your work is really important to bring this to the public. Is there a chance we could turn this around?
Yes, absolutely. I believe that many nuclear plants can be converted to natural gas. It's already happened at the Fort St. Vrain plant in Denver, and at not a very great fraction, maybe 20-30% of the cost of building a whole new one, we can convert the existing nuclear plants to harmless natural gas. And that can be done very quickly, and the turbines, the transformers, the transmission lines, the land, everything can be used, and it's been done, and it's also been done in the Zimmer plant in Cincinnati, which was originally to be a nuclear plant. They converted it under construction into a fossil fuel plant. And fossil fuel plants don't kill babies at the rate at which we are now seeing what's going on. So there is a hopeful future. And wherever the nuclear reactor is being shut down, all forms of health improve. We have papers published, and all this is available on our website, radiation.org.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sternglass. We've been speaking with Dr. Ernest